This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to iFanboy Talksplode with Chris Somney. And this episode is brought to you by Comedy Central's Ugly Americans. Hey there, folks. Christopher Naisman here. This is iFanboy Talksplode, where iFanboy.com gets to talk to some of the best and brightest in the comics industry. And, well, we certainly are doing that for this episode. We're talking with Mr. Chris Somney. And if you are not familiar with Chris's work, well, you certainly should be. Since his big league debut on Oni's Capote in Kansas, Chris has made it known that he is one of the rising stars in comics. You can see that even more in the recently released Vertigo Crime graphic novel Area 10. He's worked on series like The Mighty and The Exterminators and Siege Embedded. Well, he is now the regular artist on Marvel's new Thor series, Thor the Mighty Avenger. iFanboy's Josh Flanagan and I were able to have a nice conversation with Chris, and let's jump right in and join the conversation. We're congratulating him on his recent move with his wife to Comic Creator Hub, Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, there's definitely plenty of folks out here. I haven't really had a chance to see much of them. I'm just going to keep my nose to the grindstone. But yeah, I mean, I can feel them around me.
Well, I was going to ask you. You know, you're kind of infamous now for a couple things. One is your coffee consumption. So how does the coffee out in Portland stack up?
Oh my God, Stumptown is so awesome. Stumptown coffee. If you have never had it, oh my God, you have to drink it.
Good bean, huh?
Nice. Yeah, I want them to sponsor me. I want to put like a Stumptown logo on a jean jacket or something to wear around town.
Nice. And what you mentioned that you've been having your nose to the grindstone. So I was going to see if you'd actually gotten out to play with any of the three dimensional people yet. But it sounds like you kind of hit the ground running.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it was hard to try and work while we were driving cross country while we were getting ready for the move. So I lost a little bit of time. You know, I was still working in hotel rooms at night, but that's not exactly the most productive place to get work done. So, I mean, we got in here, and, you know, the first day that we were in the house, we set up my table, and I got right back to work. So, you know, I've been trying to catch up. I made it out to David Holland's house, and met a bunch of guys from Periscope Studios. And Jeff Parker doesn't live too far away from me, so we see him every couple of days. But, you know, we really hadn't had a chance to get out and see much of the real world. We've been here for 2 weeks now, and I still haven't been in a car except for, you know, driving a couple of blocks away. But
that's terrible.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be caught up soon.
Now, to follow you on Twitter, I mean, literally, you have a reputation among other people of a guy who is just working constantly. Is that like, is it a busy season now, or is it just that you are trying to kill yourself?
Well, I'm not trying to kill myself. I have a hard time saying no. And I've had a lot of really great projects come, you know, that have been offered to me just in the past, you know, 6 months or so. And it's, you know, the stuff that you've always wanted to do, you don't want to say no because you don't know when it'll come back around. And, you know, I got a chance to work on a Serenity book with Josh and Zach Whedon and Scott Alley. And I was just like, well, like, you can't say no to that. And I didn't have the time to do it, but, you know, I just decided to sleep less, drink more coffee, and just do it.
You're young, you're strong, you can do that.
I feel like this has aged me about 10 years, but yeah, the Serenity book is done. I just saw the final colors for it today. It looks awesome. It's by Dave Stewart's doing the colors, and there's a reason he wins all those awards. He is amazing. So yeah, it's you know. It was an exhausting period, you know, working on that and my Thor book and all the other stuff that's been, you know, across my desk here in the past few months. But, man, just getting to see those colors, it's totally worth it.
Nice. Well, you mentioned Thor, and that's the big book this week coming out is The Mighty Thor. And, you know, go ahead and tell us a little bit about how you came to work on Thor. And I mean, is that a character that you've always wanted to work on, or it seems like an interesting marriage if you told me a couple years ago that yeah, Chris will be working on Thor, I'd be like, really? But then I saw the preview pages and it kind of looks like you're made to work on that book.
Well, I really do like drawing lightning, so it's kind of okay. But yeah, I mean, a couple of years ago, if you would have told me that I was drawing Thor, I would have been like, no, that's not gonna happen. I mean, I've always liked the character, but I never really thought that my sensibilities would fit with it. But, you know, I got to give credit to Nate Cosby for, you know, thinking that I would be right for this book. You know, I'm maybe not perfectly suited for the 616 Thor. You know, I've tried to draw, you know, I've drawn him in Siege Embedded, you know, in a couple of little spots here or there. And he's just too big. My Thor is a little more live, you know, that doesn't really fit in with the current incarnation of him. I just feel like, you know, he's a god, he doesn't have to look like a bodybuilder.
Sure. I think that's a good place to, you know, kind of explain people that what the Mighty Thor is and how, if you've never read Thor before, this is probably going to be a great place to jump in because you don't have, you know, a lot of the, you know, Marvel Universe continuity to have to worry about.
Yeah, well, we're trying to make it something a lot easier for people to just, you know, if they see, you know, the trailer for the movie or if they, you know, end up going to see the movie next year and dig it, then they'll have something that's, you know, not tied into 100 different books with 60 years of history. You know, they can just grab it off the shelf and kind of run with it. And, you know, I've been having a blast on it. So, I mean, just as, you know, I am drawing it, but I've been having a fun time just reading the script, you know. As somebody who knows all the mythology, I think it works for, you know, people who are into it and people who might be new to comics or new to Thor. You know, I think it works in both realms.
I'm curious because, you know, I've talked to you about this before, and a lot of the work that you've done in the past has been fairly, you know, like street-level stuff, normal people, not necessarily terribly magical and stuff like Thor. Have you found that when working on this book, and I guess a lot of the other, you're doing a lot of stuff, have you surprised yourself with sort of the range of settings and styles, I guess, that you've had to do and how they've been coming out, or you feel like you're learning more?
Well, I'm definitely learning more. But I mean, you know, in comics, it's not like, you know, you can have, you know, one genre. I mean, there's so many genres just that are already in one title. I mean, you know, Thor is mythology and superheroes and, you know, it's science fiction. I mean, almost every comic has, like, all those different things in it. So, I mean, depending on what book I'm working on, there's just a bit more of, you know, one flavor than another. So, it's, you know, it's a different mindset with each book. But, you know, it's not terribly difficult. I mean, that's just what we're kind of made for, you know, growing up.
I guess I'm glad that you're not getting pigeonholed, I suppose. It's like, this was the guy who did Queen and Country, so that's the kind of stuff he does. And I think it's really cool to see those other kind of things happening. And if you're one of us who follow, like, the sketches that you put up, we know that you can do all sorts of things. But I guess editors are seeing other stuff.
I've been offered really great things and a real, awesome variety of things. So I was worried there for a while after Capote and Queen and Country that I would be the guy who draws people, with fedoras and suits. It easily could have gone that way, and I would be fine with that. But at the same time, it's like, the stuff that I have the most fun reading is, like, Silver Age kookiness, with big monsters and robots and, all kinds of, crazy tropes that, we've become accustomed to over, all these years of comics. And that's, the more pulpy stuff is where I lean toward. And, I was worried there for a little bit, but I mean, I've really seemed to have lucked out and just gotten, each book I do is, almost the polar opposite of the book that I did previous. So, there's a wide range I couldn't wish for a better project to come across my desk, though.
I'm curious because, there's been a lot of work coming out of you recently, and I'm curious, was there like a point that you consider to be sort of the breakthrough project for you, the thing that really got you a lot more work at like Marvel and stuff like that, or was there like a point when it turned?
I've just been working so hard, I don't know when the turning point may have been. Maybe sometime during DJ Bettis or previous? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've had offers, from other companies while I've been doing other books. So, I feel like I've had a career going since, 2005, 2006, when Capote in Kansas came out. And that felt like, I've made it. I'm actually drawing comic books, full time. And, whether it's, a big deal mainstream event thing or just, a fill-in here or there, it's still comics. I never really thought about, is this a big project? Am I there yet? I don't know. Now you're there. Now I'm trying to place it.
Well, kind of back to talking about the possible pigeonholing of style, Area 10 just came out a few months ago from Vertigo. It's part of the Vertigo crime line. It's written by Christos Gage. And that was kind of a return for you in style to what you did on Capote in Kansas. But, I mean, you had actually finished that book art-wise quite a while ago. Is it maybe a blessing in disguise that there was a lot of time in between Capote and Area 10 coming out so people didn't look at that specific style and say, once again, fedoras and that kind of sensibility. Do you think it was a blessing in disguise that there was a lot of time between that?
Well, I mean, Laura sent me links to like reviews of stuff where the reviewer will be like, it's nice to see somebody return to the way he used to draw. And it's like, well, not really return. That's just, it was actually drawn that time ago. It's good and bad. I mean, I'm glad to see it finally out and in hand. There's definitely stuff that I would change, if I had a chance to do it now. But, I mean, it's like a moment in time, It was done several years ago, and it's finally out. I mean, I'm still proud of the work, but, it is sort of a blessing in disguise, I suppose, that, it wasn't, Capote in Kansas, Queen and Country, and then Area 10. I mean, that was pretty much the order that I drew them in. So, I think if I did Area 10 and that came out before all of my superhero stuff, I could have easily have just been, like, the noir guy. I'm glad to see it doing well. I guess there's going to be a soft cover of it out now.
Oh, great. Great. Definitely, yeah. Folks pick that up because it's that and Capote. I do love that old Chris Somni art. No, I'm very much a fan of your black and white white work, and yeah, you know, I think that you approach your color work differently. I mean, it's the same line there, but I mean your color work is quite a bit different than your black and white. How do you go about, you know, it's like whenever you sit down to do Mighty Thor, I mean, do you get into a completely different artistic frame of mind whenever you know that you're working on a color project?
Well, it really becomes lately just the mood of whatever I'm drawing. You know, it's not something that I have to get myself in a different frame of mind. It's just, there's automatically a different headspace with the mood of the story. You know, like Area 10 was, you know, a gritty cop drama, you know, creepy crime thing. And, you know, it came, the art, you know, sort of had to be dark and gritty to sort of go with the, you know, the reader's frame of mind as they're reading it. And the Thor stuff is a little more simple story. Like, it's all laid out very, not kid-friendly. It's very, I don't know how to put it. It feels a whole lot more like Silver Age comics to me.
Okay.
You know, like, you know, with a hero who's smiling and having a good time punching somebody in the face. You know, you don't draw that sort of stuff the same as you would draw like Daredevil and Hell's Kitchen,
or a serial killer, you know, that's like drilling people's foreheads out with a drill.
Right. So I mean, it's just you know, it's the mood that I'm in when I start work on it. I think is really sort of informing how I'm drawing. I don't feel like the stuff that I use that's in color is that much different than anything that I do that would be a black and white book. It's just sort of, you know, informed by, you know, how I'm feeling while I'm doing it.
You know, it's at the pencil stage, does it all kind of look the same? Is it really whenever it goes to inks that it looks dramatically different?
Yeah, all the pencils look almost exactly the same. Okay. From book to book. It's a hot mess. But my pencils are not anything to show around. I think the ink is where it starts to make a difference, because most of my pencils, I don't spot blacks or anything. That's all left for the ink state, and that's where you get mood across the most.
This episode of iFanboy is sponsored by Comedy Central's Ugly Americans. For those of you attending the San Diego Comic-Con, do not miss the Ugly Americans panel. It's Friday, July 23rd from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. in room 25 ABC. The panel will feature Randy Perlstein, the voice of Leonard, Matt Oberg, the voice of Mark Lilly, Kurt Metzger, the voice of Randall Skeffington, as well as executive producers David M. Stern and Dan Powell, series creator Devin Clark, and more. You'll get to catch a sneak peek of the upcoming season, and one audience member will be selected and drawn into an upcoming episode. Don't miss the San Diego Comic-Con panel, and make sure to follow Ugly Americans at facebook.com/UglyAmericans and twitter.com/UglyAmericans, and check out the Ugly Americans Field Guide comic book at ifanboy.com. Listen for more from Ugly Americans and iFanboy as we get closer to San Diego.
When you're talking about the world of Thor and Asgard, and by the way, I believe it's pronounced Asgard, not Asgard, but people disagree.
Someone's been listening to 11 o'clock.
When you look at that, like, it is such a visually rich atmosphere. Like, when I think of, you know, instead of just dudes standing around in hallways, it's such a different feeling when you think of, like, the spires of Asgard. How much fun is it to just be able to go wild with that stuff in the background, that Kirby-influenced stuff and all that?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, I had a great time drawing Asgard. I do pronounce it Asgard, not Asgard. There's only one
S. Good.
But I had a great time doing it when I was drawing Siege Embedded. You know, there was the last few issues were, you know, around Asgard, and the last issue was in it, and some of the buildings and stuff were coming down. And it's great just getting to draw that architecture, but it's not really influenced too much by the real world, since it's, you know, it's ancient stuff in the future or something. It's, you know, I don't know how to describe it. It's ancient architecture, you know, several thousand years past being ancient, like it's been built upon until current times. So it's really cool to just be able to sort of play with all different types of architecture styles and build upon it. And then for the stuff that I'll be doing in Sword of Mighty Avenger, is going to be a lot more, there's going to be plenty of that, but it's also a lot more crazy Kirby tech. You know, it's not as especially, you know, I think a lot of the current Marvel stuff is sort of looking, I don't know, a little more Lord of the Rings and a lot less, you know, science fiction. And I really want Asgard to be sci-fi, you know.
You want to put some Kirby crackle in it.
Oh yeah, there's going to be plenty of Kirby crackle.
have you gotten to draw the Midgard serpent yet?
No, not yet. But finally, I'm only into issue 4. So
out of all those god characters, do you have a favorite? I'm guessing you've got an affinity for Volstagg, but maybe you're a Fandral man. I don't know.
Well, I've been drawing all the Warriors 3 today. But yeah, I'm leaning towards Volstagg. I mean, I was just so surprised by how much fun it was to draw on Embedded that he's really become like one of my favorite characters now. I traded Tom Fowler a painting of Volstagg for a drawing of Kilowog that I did for him. And I just get little drawings of Volstagg from folks now just because I heart Volstagg. I don't know. He's probably my top Asgardian at the moment. I even had Kate Cook draw a little tiny Volstagg for me. It was awesome.
It's interesting because in Embedded, you know, Volstagg was played, there was drama, but he was played for laughs a lot. So you really got to sort of shake that comedy, you know, tree a little bit more. And he's so, I mean, he's huge and fat, and there was these really fun, quiet moments. Was a lot of that, I guess, in the script, was it fun to do, like, a comedy thing, I guess?
Yeah, well, I mean, all of it was in the script. I mean, it was just up to me to put the expression on his face and the acting and stuff. But, yeah, it was great to be able to scratch, you know, an itch of, you know, everybody should like comedy. It's not the easiest thing to draw. You know, heck, you have to work a little harder to make comedy work in a comic. But, yeah, it was great to be able to do a little bit of cartooning in comics. Because, I mean, a lot of what was in Embedded was heavy stuff. You know, to be able to bring a little bit of levity was fun. You know, it was really fun.
I mean, and I don't mean to discount the series, but those are the things that I remember about that series is the three of them in a van.
That's
ridiculous.
I'm hungry.
I would have watched the Volstagg road trip. I would have read a 12-issue series of that. That would have been fine. I don't have to have a fight.
If we had a coupon going, I would have been all for it. Like, no, we need Volstagg, you know, fighting everybody in the Marvel U, and you know, he needs to have a double glider for like 5 more issues. I totally would have done it. This is too much fun.
Very cool. Well, hey, you had mentioned Tom Fowler a couple minutes ago, and you and Tom are comic twarters. And anyone who has not found is it comictwart.blogspot.com? Is that the address?
We actually have just a regular .com now. It's comictwart.com.
There you go. Mm-hmm. For the folks out there who aren't aware of Comic Twart, and if you're on Twitter, you it's nearly impossible to not be aware of it. But for folks that aren't aware of it, let them know what Comic Twart is.
Comic Twart is sort of a collective of 16 comic artists. Some are just starting out, some are old pros, but we're all sort of friends on Twitter, and we kind of started drawing sort of the same sort of stuff on Twitter, and we're all like, well, let's put together a blog where, you know, we pick a topic each week, and we all draw the same thing. So that's what we've been doing now. Gosh, it seems like we've been doing it forever already.
It's going on a year, I think. I mean, it's...
I don't know. I can't keep track. But yeah, there's 16 of us. We all, you know, alphabetically through the last name of each creator. We go alphabetically and pick just whatever random character you want to see everybody else draw. and we post it each week, and we all pick a character, and yeah, it's awesome. There's it's always a neat surprise to see how different characters are interpreted by some other creators who I already look up to.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. What are some of the characters that have been some of your favorites to draw over the last, you know, however long you guys have been doing it?
Well, it's weird that, you know, the simpler it is, the more fun I have. I had a really good time drawing Asterix and Obelix last week, and before that it was Tintin. Those are, I think, obviously they're the most recent, but those are. It was also my return. I had to take a couple of weeks off from comics where I didn't have the time to do any sketches. So it was also my triumphant return, so it was good to jump back into the swing of things.
As a person who has to compile a weekly thing of sketches from the internet, I just really appreciate Twerk. I can just tell you that. it's hard not to just reprint everything you guys do there. Yeah, and I'm like, I can only use one or two of these this week. You know, it's interesting to look at that, and I think that when you know, probably even when you started, the sort of way that artists and comic creators communicate with each other and form the community was radically different. And so now you've got Twitter and other stuff where the site where you can sort of meet other guys through doing art over the internet. And I'm curious, does it feel like things have changed a lot from even when you started, you know, just you know, 5-6 years ago?
Absolutely. I mean, when I first started out, you know, I made the trek out to San Diego in 2000. I didn't have the internet or anything, but the only way I could meet comic creators was face-to-face. Or you could, you know, try and track down somebody's snail mail address and send them samples, or, you know, try and, you know, trade zines. And, I mean, things are so different now that, I mean, if there's an artist you like, you can shoot them an email or leave a comment on their blog, or, you know, or you can talk to them on Twitter. I mean, if like the me from 8 years ago knew that I would be like, you know, sending messages back and forth with Brian Hitch on Twitter, my head would explode. The world is so different now for creators and fans. It's just amazing how far we've come.
Well, I imagine there are real world sort of effects from that. I mean, I imagine there's guys who are on Twart who've maybe gotten work, you know, that they wouldn't have because of, you know, everybody knew each other, things like that. I feel like it's a really interesting way for people to get their names out there and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, I have editors who, you know, it said that they frequent the blog or see other people's art through it, and I think that's great. You know, I'm really excited that it's getting some folks more exposure, and, you know, and it's good for all of us. I mean, just having more art out there. I mean, there's lots of folks who subscribe to the Twart blog who don't follow any of us, you know, as, you know, each of our blogs. They just follow the collective blog, and I mean, that's cool too, you know. I mean, it's, you know, the more the merrier.
Have you seen an impact at? I mean, I imagine the convention experience has changed for you a lot over even just the last year. Is sort of done more Marvel high profile gigs, and sort of, you know, your web presence is fairly huge with all the sketches and stuff like that. Are you noticing that at conventions?
Well, I mean, my sketch lists fill up faster, you know, at the beginning of each show. But I mean, you know, I've always had really nice people come by my table. I don't really think anything of, you know, whether there's a whole lot more or less. It's hard to gauge since I don't really get out from behind my table at a show to begin with. But it is really cool to, you know, to see all these people in person that you know through the internet. Like, there's probably only two or three people that I've ever seen in person that are on the Twitter blog before, you know, before we got it started. And granted, there's, you know, only about six now that I've seen in person, but, you know, all these people feel like, I mean, they don't feel like, they are my friends now. And it's so weird to be, it's like we're all pen pals, you know, but have just never met in person. We all do the same thing every day. We're all stuck at a desk, and you know, we all have that in common, and it builds just like an instant camaraderie.
I feel like ultimately, that's got to be really good for the work. I just feel like I see all the guys sort of pumping each other up and pushing each other to do work and things like that. And I really feel like the more excited people are about doing comics, the better the comics are going to be. And so that's one of the things I think is really neat about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really strange, too, to consider, like, you know, most people out in the real world, you know, if they're all competing for the same job, it's you know, they're all trying to climb the ladder, and they'll it's a cutthroat out there. But all of the people who make comics, we all just love comics. And, we're all basically competing for the same work because there's only so many comic gigs to go around. But we all are fans of each other's work, so it's like we're all just trying to prop each other up. And whether you lose a job or somebody else that you know takes your spot, like, everybody's just like, oh, that's awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing your work on this. You know, it's really neat that, you know, there's nothing cutthroat about comics at all. I mean, we're all into it because we love it.
Well, you talked a few minutes ago about back in 2000, what it was like to get in touch with artists as you were coming up and getting into the industry, and how it's much easier to do that now. Now that you have a decade in the industry working, are you finding that young artists who are, you know, just coming out of high school and college are approaching you, asking you for industry advice now?
There's been a few people here or there who ask my advice in passing, but I don't really think that, you know, I don't feel like I'm anybody to give advice. You know, I've been in comics for half my life now, but I still don't feel like, you know, I'm an authority on anything. So, I mean, if somebody asks me, you know, anything about productivity or, you know, I can manage to sit at my desk for 20 hours a day or how to turn out more pages, I can tell them that. But, I mean, really, I don't feel like I have that much advice to share. But, I mean, I'll happily say something if anybody asks. But, yeah, I mean, it's not something that comes up very often.
One of the things about you that's always intrigued me is that you talk to a lot of artists that are, you know, about the same age, and their influences are, you know, John Byrne and Neil Adams, and, you know, even, you know, like John Romita Jr., you know, the guys that were pretty prolific whenever we were growing up. But a lot of your influences go back much farther than that. You know, as you kind of look at the artists that have inspired you and that you've really learned from and developed your style as it is now, you know, who are some of those guys that influenced you?
Well, Laura Lexington, Laura's my wife, for anybody who doesn't know already. I mentioned her in passing. Laura said that I'm like the youngest 80-year-old man. My taste skew old. I don't know why that's always been sort of that way, but I like old movies. I like old comics. I read lots of old newspaper strips and old, like, the collections that IDW has been doing lately are really great. But I like, you know, Alex Raymond, Milt Caniff, Alex Toth, you know, guys like that. I mean, it's not exactly, I don't know if that's cool or not cool.
Oh, it's very
definitely
cool.
Not current.
Yeah, I mean, there's not
it's
many.
Cool
yeah.
if you're not doing it to be cool, it's cool.
Yes,
I think. So if
but
you
yeah.
are trying to be cool, then you're not cool. I think I'm not cool.
Oh, I never understood those rules anyway. Yeah, I was always.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure I was not cool for most of my life. But yeah, I mean, my taste you very Silver Age for the most part. But I'm also into the old strips and stuff. So a lot of that sort of comes through in my funny books as I draw them.
Yeah, not that many people in their late 20s, early 30s who are big Milton Caniff fans. And
oh my God, Milton Caniff is so awesome. People are just, they're so missing out.
Oh.
I mean, I could stare at Milton Caniff and Toth and Noel Sickles, you know, I could stare at that stuff for days and never get sick of it.
Yeah, and you can tell, in your art that there's a lot of that there. And I've just always thought that was pretty cool. So it is cool. We had mentioned Capote in Kansas, and it's one that I always like to remind people about because one of the best folks in the industry, Mr. Andy Parks, wrote that, and you did the art on it. Is Capote still in print to this day?
I believe it's still in print. I don't think it should be too hard to track one down.
So anyone that is interested in the story of In Cold Blood by Truman Capote, check it out because it is a great kind of true fiction-ish graphic novel. I was been a fan of your work since that came out, Chris.
Oh, thanks, man. No, that was where I feel like, you know, I finally started to get making comics. You know, it was with Capote in Kansas where I first started inking and where I feel like I finally started to get a groove on storytelling. And, you know, it's definitely still one of the best things that I've ever done. You know, I'm still really proud of it. So if anybody picks it up, you know, I appreciate it. And anybody who buys it gets a free sketch of Truman Capote inside the cover.
There you go.
Bring
it to a show. Don't mail it to me. Just bring it to a show, and I'll be glad to do a sketch in it.
Because everybody likes a good origin story, and I don't know if I've ever heard yours. How did Truman?
I thought you were going to ask Truman Capote. Like, well, no, I'm from the South.
Could you just tell me everything that you know about Truman Capote, real quick? It's more like a quiz. no, I'm curious how that came up about, because if you just said like it was the first time you'd inked, you were learning to do storytelling. So how did you set that up? How'd you hook up with Andy Parks and Oni?
Well, I've been taking my samples around to a bunch of shows. I mean, I've been taking them around since I was like 12 years old. Just always begging for work. And I met Brian Hurt at a local show, in St. Louis, and he introduced me to the folks at Oni Press, and I showed them like my Fantastic Four samples that I had worked up way back when. And, you know, they held on to a packet, and I think they showed my stuff to Andy. I forget how it all took down. It's been a while. I forget how it all sort of rattled out. But somehow or other, Andy got a hold of my pages. I ended up doing sample pages for Capote in Kansas, the first six pages of the book. And I turned those into Oni, and I think James Lucas Jones at Oni sent them along to Andy and was like, I don't know, what do you think of this guy? Do you think he's right for it? And Andy said, oh yeah, he's the guy.
If you could draw a good hat, then you were good enough for Andy.
I don't know if there were hats in the first six pages, but yeah, the first six pages of the book were my sample pages. There's a few tweaks before it went to print, but that was my test for the book.
Wow.
That's what got me the job. So, you know, they liked those first six pages, and, you know, I got the rest of the script and got to work. You know, and we were off and rolling.
Nice. And I have a feeling that Andy was probably a pretty good person for your first big job to work with.
Yeah, it was nerve-wracking, you know, at first. When I found out that, you know, I didn't have such a great inker as my writer, so already I was nervous to be working on my first, like, real big professional job, but also I was going to be inking my own book, and it was the first time I had ever done any inking, so I felt like all of my mistakes were going to be on display, and he would know everything that I was, like, faking, it just made me work twice as hard. You know, and I was still working a day job. I was working at Borders during the day, and I was drawing Capote at night. So, you know, I had to work triple hard.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, work all day, come home, try and, you know, draw comics till, you know, sunrise, and go back to work the next day. But, you know, I think it worked out all right. You know, Andy was really supportive, though, through the whole process. I mean, you know, he gave me pointers where, you know, things came up, but, I mean, really, you know, we just sort of went to it. I mean, we really just clicked, you know. The storytelling just made sense. You know, his pacing is so well done on the page that I didn't feel like I didn't have to, you know, twist or try and fix or make anything work. I mean, he's been doing this for, a lifetime.
Yeah.
And he just gets it, and that made my job so much easier, especially with something that was already, it's a subject matter that was close to his heart, which made it all that much more important to him to get it right. And by the time I started working on the stages, so much of that work is already done that, I just had to sit down and draw it.
As we wrap things up here, I know that there's plenty of stuff from Chris Somni that is coming out. The second volume for the Mighty, is it slated to come out in trade here pretty soon?
Yeah, I think it's coming out this month or maybe next month.
Okay,
it was in previews a couple of months ago, so it should be soon.
Should be soon, because I think that was a really, really good but overlooked by way too many people series. I know, Josh, you were a fan of The Mighty, right? I remember hearing you talk about that on the Pick of the Week show quite a bit.
I loved the crap out of that book.
Yeah.
I loved the crap out of that book at first when Peter Stayberg was on it, and then I loved it more when you were on it. And I'm not kissing, like we talked about it whenever, because it's one of those books that I really liked to recommend to people, because it was just like, here's a story you can just read. There's nothing attached to it. We get so many questions all the time of, well, how do I start reading this? And it's just like, just read the thing. It's just a single story. But it's meaty and it's fun and it's moody, and you didn't really know what's going to happen. So it's a good one.
Yeah, I feel like it was really sort of under the radar. It didn't get a lot of press. We didn't get a chance to do a ton of interviews for it. Something in DC that I don't really feel like it got promoted very much. I'm still really proud of it. I think it was, it turned out really well. I mean, it was a great story by Pete Tomasi and Keith Champagne, and, to be able to follow one of my heroes, Peter Stayberg, was amazing. The work I did on it, I thought was really some of the best stuff that I had done in a really long time. So, I would totally say for folks to pick it up. I started with issue 6. I started on issue 6, and I wrapped up the series at 12. Is that right?
That's right.
Crap. I think it's 6 through 12.
I believe so. So yeah, you'll be the whole second trade on that. So I've got the first trade right here somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. So I did two, an issue or two in the first trade. I can't remember. Anyway, great time on it. I think it turned out pretty well. Which is saying something, I'm my own worst critic.
and then you mentioned the Serenity story, which when will that be hitting stands?
That'll be out in November. It's Serenity, the Shepherd's Tale. The outline is by Joss, and all the dialogue and everything was written by Zach Whedon, and colored by Dave Stewart. And it is 48 pages. I think it's hardcover.
Okay.
And I'll be out in November.
Oh, wow.
And I'm also doing an 11-page story in I'm an Avenger number 1. It's written by Jim McCann. It's going to be with the Young Avengers. So I'm working on that right now, as well as Thor the Mighty Avenger, which is monthly. The first one is out this Thursday, and I'm on number 4 right now, so it will not be late ever.
Nice. Always.
Are you going to get to take a vacation ever?
Because
I want you to.
No, I want to.
Okay, good.
Laura and I, we're probably going to do like Hawaii or something pretty soon. It's nearly like it's done with I Am an Avenger. That'll be in a couple of weeks, I'll be done with that. And then I'll just be on tour for the foreseeable future.
Nice, because we worry about you, Chris. We worry.
Catch up a little bit.
Just want you to take care of yourself.
Yeah, the internet worries about you.
You're too sweet. No, a lot of folks have asked if I'm okay, like if I overwork myself, and I am overworking myself for the time being, but might as well do it while I can, as soon as I get done with I'm an Avenger, then it's just down to one book, and I mean, I know that sounds like, wow, it's still a lot of work. I'm still doing a monthly book, but when you're doing like 2 or 3 projects or 4 or 5 projects at a time, you get down to one, it's like a damn vacation.
You and Mike Norton, I swear. It's like, how you doing, Mike? Oh, it's so good. I'm only working on one book right now. It's, yeah, you guys amaze me. All right, well, Mr. Chris Somney, for people to, we covered all the books that you have coming out, but I know that we mentioned Comic Twart. Where else can folks find you online?
Well, besides Comic Twart, I have my regular blog, which is just chrissomnee.com, chrissanne.com. I also have a DeviantArt. I have no idea what my DeviantArt name is. Now that I say it. But I mean, just search DeviantArt for Somni and it'll be the first one that comes up. And also, my wife does a blog where she collects all the notes that I do for her lunch each week. And that's called Lunch Notes. It's LUNCHNOTES. It's all one word, .blogspot.com.
And you can buy the collection at cons, right?
Yeah, we carry around there's three collected books of it that we take around to shows, and I mean, it's definitely a departure from what I do in my comics, but I think that's kind of why it's fun, you know, just something real quick, something that I just stuff in their lunch bag each day, and if you want to see sort of the behind the scenes of what goes on with the comic book artist and his wife and our daffy little cat, then you sort of you get it right there.
Yep.
It's sort of my indie comics coming out.
Where you make the rest of us feel like we're not nearly attentive enough husbands. So thank you.
Yeah, you're not doing enough. Take care of your wife, gentlemen.
I don't feel that way. My wife and I both come and we're raising a small baby. I am an excellent husband. Regardless of what cartoons Chris does. Sorry, had to get that out there.
You're both making me feel bad. All right, well, Chris Somney, thank you so much for number one, making such pretty comics for us, and for number two, being such a good guest. And Twitter, you are at Chris Somney, correct?
Oh, that's the other one I was forgetting. Yeah, at Chris Somney, that's me.
Yep.
If you want to hear about whatever coffee I'm drinking that day, and I also post whenever I do sketches on my blog, as well as while I take suggestions, and that's usually through Twitter. So if you're up in the morning, sometimes I say, you know, I need to draw something from a blog today. What should I do? And, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you can give me suggestions, and I'll post it, you know, later on that day.
There you go. Great. All right, Josh, thanks for riding shotgun with me.
Always a pleasure. What am I saying? It's our show.
I was going to say, I thought Josh was driving.
I let the subordinates feel like they're driving. It's like a management thing.
Every once in a while, he lets us borrow the keys and take the iFanboy car around the block, but we always have to return it and with a full tank of gas.
Well, thanks so much for having me, guys. It was a good time talking to you.
All right, thank you, sir. You have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
And a big thanks to Chris Somney. Make sure to check out Thor the Mighty Avenger this week and all the other books that we talked about, like the Mighty and Capote in Kansas and Area 10. He's done some work on the Exterminators. Chris has worked on a lot of stuff, and it's all fantastic. Remember to check out all the great things that iFanboy.com has to offer. There's great columns and articles from iFanboy staff with community comments and opinions from listeners just like you. Every Sunday, there is the Pick of the Week audio podcast, and there is Wednesday's iFanboy video show. Check out the awesome pull list service at iFanboy.com. It is the best way to make sure that you don't miss all the comics that you want each week. And after you read the week's comics, you can rate and review them along with the rest of the iFanboy staff and community. Once again, a big thank you to Chris Somney for spending some time with us. Hope you enjoyed what you heard today. If you did, run on over to the iTunes Music Store and leave us an iTunes Music review. It is the best way to spread word about the show. We certainly do appreciate it. Hope everyone has a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. Come on back for the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, and I'm sure that we will have more Talksplodes right around the corner.